Hold on.
I keep doing this.
Abs in a six pack.
Hello, abs in a six pack.
Abs in a six pack is not the greatest podcast in the world.
I know abs in a six pack is a bad show, but what else do you have going on?
It's April 4th, 4/4/2024 for Abs in a Six Pack, episode 234. I'm here live with Charlie Robinson of Macro Aggressions, author and podcaster, and this is a new
son of a bitch.
I'm from Tennessee, and I've been doing this for a long time.
Hillary Clinton. More like Hillary Clinton, son. Bitch got a pussy. I mean, she got a real pussy. You can stick loose change inside.
Productions.
Pussy. Pussy.
Yes, he believed he was drugged and then raped by Taylor Swift.
That's a wet dream, Dr. Wood. You understand that, right?
Oh, Charlie. What's going on, buddy? Good to have you back.
Good to be back. Good to not be getting raped by Taylor Swift.
Do you know the backstory behind that?
I do not.
Okay, so this is true. I was in the Waffle House, I think, two or three days prior to it happening. There was a shooting. I guess you could technically qualify it as a mass shooting because I think four or five people died in Antioch, Tennessee. And this guy came in and just started shooting people up at the Waffle House because he had seen a bumper or a license plate of a car parked at the Waffle House that had a 33 in it, and he took that as a sign from God that he had to kill everybody in there. And we watched a seven-hour stream of this court trial, and this Dr. Wood was the psychologist, and she was on the stand talking about this guy who mailed Taylor Swift 333 individually wrapped pink starbursts, and he the guy that shot it up the Waffle House up believed that Taylor Swift was drugging him and raping him at night. It's like definitely MKUltra weirdness. Yeah, really weird shit. But yeah, I was in that Waffle House, like, you know, very, you know, within a few days of that happening. It's pretty crazy. It's right outside Nashville.
God damn.
Yeah. And so I ate some gas station gummies too. So this, by the way, so this show might get a little wonky. I was advised by almost everyone not to eat these too. So, I got them in a gas station for. I'll eat the last one. Fuck it, go all the way, go big or go home. That's what I said. These are the red and white Animita muscaria mushrooms. It's like a chemical extract of that and THCP, which are both.
Oh,
just,
you're definitely gonna trip out.
Yeah. So. The conversation might get a little weird tonight.
It's okay. That's all right. I'm ready for it. I'm down.
Hell yeah. So I've been listening to Macro Aggressions. I really loved your latest episode all about 1488 and how great it was. Oh, wait, no. It was 1948. My bad.
1948, yeah. 1488, isn't that the aren't you giving coded messages?
Yeah, I'm giving code to like the weirdos in my audience. Yeah.
Everything was just, I kept coming across all this stuff and everything was pointing me to 1948 for some reason, and I was like, damn, what the fuck was going on in 1948? Had everybody all in a tizzy. And I did a whole episode on it, and just because I thought it was, well, listen, better that than I shoot up a Waffle House, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well.
Like I was getting a message.
Did they have Waffle Houses in 1948? I think they had them in 1488 for sure.
I'm sure in Nashville they had them in 1948.
Oh, man. Dude, so while we're on the World War II topic, I know Joe Rogan's already covered this, but have you seen these AI regenerated speeches of Adolf Hitler where they take his speeches and put them into English?
No, But I do know that I was talking to Corey Hughes one day, and he's like, you know why I don't ever have any Adolf Hitler speeches in English, don't you? And I was like, no, why? He's like, because if they had them in English, everyone would understand that he's making a lot of sense. You know, he's making a lot of sense, and they can't have that. I was like, and I started thinking, I was like, you know, I really haven't seen his speeches translated or, you know, I mean, it's all any speech when you're yelling it in German is scary.
Sounds bad. Yeah. Well, Germans, yeah. The Germans are a disgusting people and they have a disgusting language to match, but they're so I'll play a little bit of this, but it's
okay.
It's, I don't know what, maybe we'll go through a little bit and come back to it, but
let's when you start the show with Hitler, you know, you're it's going to be rad tonight.
So I'll say this. He correctly identifies the problem, but his quote unquote final solution may not have been the correct one. I think
freedom or slavery. Bürgerbräu Keller, Munich, July 28th, 1922. My dear fellow Germans, a sudden commotion has come over the German people. Now even those circles are beginning to stir, which until now have been deaf to the constant warnings that we have been trying to address to the mass of our people almost without interruption for the past 3 years. Of course, many people still do not know why they are upset. They believe that perhaps it is only about so-called special privileges, or about the restriction of freedom of speech, or about the politicization of the civil service, and so on. Certainly all these are extremely serious matters. Today, however, it is about much more. It is about a huge process of destruction of our people and our fatherland. This is happening now before our very eyes. All these things would be trifles in themselves if they did not represent characteristics of a process which has been taking place for many years and whose end will be a horrible one. We can all sense that now two worlds are colliding with each other, and not only here, but everywhere we look, in the now oppressed Russia, in Italy, in France, and in England, etc. A relentless struggle between the ideals of the national-minded and the nebulous international. It is a struggle that now goes back almost 120 years. It began at the moment when the Jew received the right of citizenship in the European states. The political emancipation of the Jews was the beginning of a madness, for with it...
He's not off to a good start here. So this is where he loses me. Jews having equal rights... That's bad. I'm like, well, I mean, they should have equal rights, right? I mean, I think we can all agree with that. So he's, but he, there's some interesting stuff in here where considering it's 1922 and you hear the speech translated, you're like, okay, so he's calling out the political controllers and he details how in this 31 minutes and 33 second clip, which obviously we're not going to get to even 10 minutes of this probably, but he lays out how they with the brackets around them,
the Jews
are completely adept at controlling the media. He says like he calls
they're good
that,
at
like,
banking and media.
Yeah, well, I'll just continue here because it you think like. That people always say like never again. You're like, yeah, like the Holocaust could ever happen again. But it's like, if you have the right guy and the right, the guy that's capable of this kind of misdirection, because Hitler was a bad guy, but he was able to correctly call out some really intricate problems that I didn't think were identified almost 100 years ago, but they were.
That one gave full civic rights and equality to a people which was racially much more clearly and abruptly demarcated than all others, which always formed and will always form a state within the state. Perhaps.
So, yeah, so they will always form a state within the state. I thought that was interesting.
They don't assimilate.
Well, yeah, and the Jewish religion isn't the only thing capable of this. I think Mormons were doing this pretty. This was why the Mormons were driven out of and had to flee to Utah pretty much. And why they were getting killed because they were, you know, run by a pedophile and they had a complete, any town they were in, they would take over the newspapers and shit like that if they were there long enough. So I think the
he had hit the leader of that religion had his epiphany while taking gas station mushrooms.
Yeah, I'll read the ingredients on here. So it's 700 milligrams per gummy. And I just ate the whole bag. And it's a mushroom extract containing muscarine and muscimol, which before the show, I was telling Charlie, according to the NIH, those cause muscle spasms, potentially seizures, and frothing at the mouth, which is a side effect I had never heard of before, except from rabies, maybe. And THCP, which is 33 times stronger than THC. And then corn syrup is the ingredient after that. Pecitin. Or pectin and citric acid, arctic acid, and flavoring. It just says flavoring.
So, like at this point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's not all.
It's just poison.
At once, but it went just as it does today, and as it always has gone. First a little finger, then a second and a third, and so bit by bit, until at last a people which still in the 18th century appeared to be completely alien came to possess politically the same rights of citizenship as ourselves, and that's exactly how it went economically as well. The mass industrialization of the people meant the concentration of great masses of workers in the cities. Large crowds came into being, unfortunately not properly handled by those who had the moral obligation to take care of them. In parallel with this, however, there was a gradual monetization of the entire labor force. The share system came into being, and as a result, the stock exchange gradually became the conductor of the entire national economy. But the owners of this institution were and are, without exception, Jews.
See, and another thing that this made me think was, if you replace Hitler's speeches here, if you replace the word Jews with white people, straight white males, it's pretty much exactly what the media pushes on a daily basis for the last 15 years.
We need a final solution
for white
for those honkies.
Put me on a train.
I say without exception because the few who participate in it as non-Jews are in the end nothing more than screens, token Christians who are needed to keep up the pretense to the broad masses that these institutions are natural to all peoples and their economies, while in reality they are institutions which correspond exclusively to the essence of the Jewish people and thus also spring from it. At that time, Europe stood at a crossroads. It began to divide into two halves, Western Europe on the one hand, and Central and Eastern Europe on the other. Western Europe first advanced in industrialization. Especially in England, crowds of agricultural laborers, sons of farmers, or ruined farmers themselves, poured into the cities and formed a new fourth estate. But there is one important fact here, which many fail to take into account. England, like France, had relatively few Jews. The consequence of this, however, was that the great masses concentrated in the cities did not come into direct contact with this foreign nation, and the aversion which would necessarily arise did not find sufficient nourishment. Finally, the Jews of England, who at that time numbered scarcely 50 to 60,000, were able to Europeanize themselves with playful ease to such an extent that they remained hidden from the primitive eye of the common man, and he could not notice them. As pillars of the economy, but especially as the bearers of great capital, they no longer appeared as foreigners, but as Englishmen themselves. This prevented anti-Semitism from gaining fundamental power in these countries. The same was true of France. Precisely because of this, however, it was possible to introduce in these countries the system known as democracy. Precisely in these countries, it was possible to establish a form of government that could mean nothing but the outweighing of intelligence and true energy by the sheer dead weight of the masses. In other words, it was possible there for the small class of Jewish intelligentsia, hidden in the British people, to manipulate the broad masses with playful ease in such a way that the latter, unaware of whom they were obeying, served the purposes of this small class. There, with press propaganda and control of information, it was possible to found the prototypical large parties. Even back then, there were always two or three groups that appeared to be fighting against each other, but in reality were all hanging on a gold thread, and everything was adjusted to a peculiar human characteristic. That man gets tired of something he has had for a long time. He wants something new, and so two parties were needed. One of them rules, and the other one forms the opposition. When one party is played out, the opposition party comes to power, and the played-out party now takes its turn as the opposition. After 20 years, the new party becomes played out, and the game repeats itself anew. In reality, this is certainly an ingenious mill in which the interests of a nation are ground down. As is well known, such a thing is called self-government of a people. In the process, we always find two main buzzwords, freedom and democracy, as figureheads. Freedom is understood to mean, at least among the authoritative bodies that actually govern, the possibility of plundering the broad masses without limits or resistance. The masses themselves, of course, believe that freedom means the exercise of a very particular freedom of movement, both freedom of movement of the tongue and freedom to move about the streets, etc. A bitter deception. On the whole, we can say that England as well as France put on the chains of slavery already back then. With a bronze firmness, these states are in Jewish chains.
So despite his anti-Semitism and the wrongheadedness and a lot of that, he's calling out he's calling out things that I didn't think would resonate with people back in 1922. But apparently people in 1922 understood well enough to elect this guy that there are controllers, Jewish or not, that control both political parties, which I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. To talk about the pro wrestling aspect of it all.
Yeah.
How it's, how you're the opposition party now for a little while, and then we'll swing you back in there.
Not endorsing the guy by any means, but it's fascinating to it. And it's understandable hearing him talk, assuming these are all available on archive.org on the Internet Archive, but the Hitler AI translated speeches, but hours and hours of them. But it makes me realize oh, wow, this is why it resonated with so many people, because he was, whether or not his solutions were correct, which I would say they weren't, he was calling out the real problems, at least in some ways.
Yeah. Listen, the ground is being prepped right now for the possibility of some leader to come along and rally everybody against this insanity, this woke insanity, and in the process, usher in an authoritarian hellscape. So we've got that looking.
Midnight Mike, kind of concerns me when he talks about that, but I think he's right that the backlash from the insanity of the left wing could be used to bring in an authoritarian right wing regime.
Yeah, it's the overcorrection that you worry about. It's when the left hand of government of Joe Biden allows 8 million illegals across the border, and then the right hand of government, Donald Trump, in his second term, comes in and says, "I want the freedom to move people without any questions." And next thing he's that's the beginning of, anytime you're moving large groups of people together, that's code word for depopulation. So you can see how this overreaction could be used to justify some pretty horrible measures as a response to it. And that's kind of how it was after 9/11. It's like, hey, listen, if you want us to make sure that this never happens again, you need to let us take the gloves off. And not constrain us with all this nonsense. We need to be able to operate. And in the wake of 9/11, the American people were like, "Do what you need to do, just do what you need to do." And that's what my fear is, that with the Biden stuff with the border, is that when Trump gets in there, he just kind of says, "Listen, I need the flexibility to do what I need to do, and no questions asked." And that, of course, would be the setup for something pretty diabolical.
Reopen that 9/11 investigation. What really happened there?
Have you noticed uh, It's got to be. I mean, I know it's a psyop, but have you noticed a big like comeback for anti-Semitism lately? Like a big resurgence, especially on Twitter. It's off the chain. Even Elon Musk is getting in on the action. What's the angle on that op? Have you noticed that? It really kind of kicked off with the invasion of Gaza, but I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime where anti-Semitism is cool now. I guess I was ahead of the curve on it, but now it's, you know,
well, what threw, well, first of all, they are losing the public relations battle on all of this stuff. They might be winning the actual war against the Palestinians, but they're losing the information war, and it's an information war, and they're losing
they
it.
As in Israel?
And Israel is losing it, yeah. I think the people are looking at them and going, they're saying, you know, your response to this is over the top. And as a result, a lot of people are deciding that they, you know, that they're against this sort of overreach. I don't think that, you know, I find myself in a weird spot where I'm for once, you know, I'm super critical of Israel. I find that for once I'm now on the same side as all those lunatic leftists at colleges, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels very weird to me to be associated with them.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is it seems like things that would have been a bannable offense, and maybe it's just Twitter, but it's bleeding over into other social media. It seems as if there are just the most anti-Jew things I've ever seen on social media right now, to the point where, and Nick Fuentes has, you know, millions of Groiper fans and all this, just him filling up every chat I'm in. There's just, you know, it seems like it's an op. It just seems like the whole thing is a big op. And they want people to stop. They want people to hate Jews, I guess. They're trying to create another Hitler. I don't know. It's really weird. I don't know exactly how to put, I don't know how to describe it or put my finger on it. But the anti-Semitism has been dialed up. And maybe it's just what the algorithm is feeding me, but I don't think so. Because I've seen people that I never would have put in that camp are now posting, you know, what's the meme, the merchant meme with like the really the big nose guy rubbing his hands together, like people that I just
never would have,
the grappler. Yeah, I just have, like, what is happening with that? And I will say, Nick Fuentes, somebody sent me this, somebody on Twitter, I think, I forgive me, whatever listener sent me this video, but there's a video of Nick Fuentes on January 6th with the megaphone outside the Capitol saying, "Break down the barricades, enter the Capitol, destroy everything, ignore the police." And you're like, wait a minute. So this guy is definitely a Fed. And he's the hero of the anti-Israel movement right now. I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point. But what have you followed any
Patriot
of?
Patriot Front?
Yeah, well, he's not Patriot. I don't think he's affiliated with them, but it feels like that type of a thing.
Yeah. I'm suspicious of all this stuff. Any sort of organized group, and you know how hard it is to gain an audience. Anybody that's got a disproportionately large audience compared to their like charisma factor makes me feel like it's an op. Like Ben Shapiro, you watch him and you go,
"Oh, that guy's
who? Yeah, who the fuck would ever watch that guy voluntarily?" Like, there's no way he can be popular.
Let me tell you about this, and let me tell you about that. Let me tell you, insanely. Yeah,
there's nothing about him that
he's not
that's
like.
Appealing.
I think Fuentes is funny though. Like that's and he was
for sure.
He wins every intellectual debate he's ever been a part of. He's beaten Alex Jones in debate. He's beaten, wasn't Glenn Beck, because I don't think Glenn Beck even would associate with him, but I've seen him debate with so many people, and he always comes out on top because everybody else's positions are indefensible. I still think he's probably a Fed, even more so now that I saw the January 6th footage of him, but he's 5 years younger than me, and he's a fucking, he's hilarious. He's smart. And he's buddies with like Dick Masterson and these guys, who I'm pretty sure is not a Fed, but he has bank accounts taken away. He's been designated an international terrorist. But if there could be things going on behind the scenes, if you are part of an op, I think they probably take care of you, you know, on the hush hush.
Yeah. Well, look, if the goal is to keep people divided and fighting with each other and stirred up, and then he serves a purpose. I mean, I don't. What are they trying to do? Just get everybody bickering about Israel? Like, well, Israel is doing things that are going to get rightly mocked. Just their behavior has been over the top.
You're Jewish, right?
So of course people are going to talk about it. Ben Shapiro is not going to defuse that bomb any at all. I mean,
between Ben Shapiro and Rabbi Shmuley, I think they've been hurting Israel more than they've been helping.
Rabbi Shmuley is the worst ad for the state of Israel ever. He is the opposite of the tourism bureau. He's the anti-tourism bureau.
We did a whole episode deconstructing the Shmuley clips last show, and by the end of it, we just started calling stores and playing the Shmuley clips for employees. Like, just crank calling stores and being like, hey, will you listen to this and tell us what you think? Just playing that clips of Shmuley and Alex Jones talking.
Well, I mean, and again, like, there is a stereotype, right? We shouldn't put people in two boxes, and you know, stereotypes are, you know, get you in a lot of trouble. And then Rabbi Shmuley comes out, and you're like, Jesus, you're every stereotype rolled into one. You're the grabbler. You're running a butt plug factory with your daughter. Like, that's really bizarre. There's nothing about that that's normal. You look like a troll, like an actual troll. Yeah, you like act like an face. Asshole.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you're extremely deceptive, you know, and so it's like, God, man, like, you're every stereotype rolled into one. And you're insane too. Like, and you're watching like a mental breakdown. It's fascinating. Fascinating to me.
Did you watch the full, I watched it live and then I watched it twice more again. Did you watch the full Alex Jones Shmuley debate? That was so good.
No, I listened to clips of it on OBDM.
Completely unproductive, but it was an hour and a half of just glorious entertainment. When Alex Jones kept calling him Mr. Butt Plug, it's fucking,
are you wearing a butt plug now?
Yeah. We started calling, last episode, we started calling sex stores and asking for kosher dildos and butt plugs.
Oh, yeah. It's a big deal these days. You never can be too careful. Make sure to have your.
By the way, I never did play the disclaimer jingle. I should probably do the disclaimer just to, you know, for legal reasons. Okay, well, that's enough of that. I wanted to ask you about something because I'm pretty well caught up on macroaggressions. By the way, macroaggressions is it macroaggressions.io?
It is.
Yes. And so anyway, I think I'm mostly caught up on it, but I haven't heard much recent coverage, unless I missed it, which is possible, of Bobby the Op, as Adam and John of No Agenda call him. What's your take on, because I really wanted to believe in this guy. I've liked him, you know, almost a decade before he ran for president. I was a fan. But between his Israel stance and his vice president pick, is he actually an op? Is he unwittingly or wittingly just part of the system's plan? Or is he actually a real, is there something we can hope in this guy?
He's been the biggest disappointment to me, because, you know, you think you've got an ally when you've got a guy that comes out that hard against the pharmaceutical industry. He clearly understands that there's a big problem there. You know, so you think that that's going to be your guy. And then, you know, he has a slip up here and there, and you try to overlook it, and you go, well, yeah, I know he, you know, his wife threw like a Christmas party and everyone had to show that they were vaccinated. I mean, like, okay, whatever, fine. And then you start going, Noel. And then his Israel stance, you go, my God, man, I talk about Shmuley. Really, this is the guy you're going to bring this guy in? This guy's going to come in. He's going to set you straight on Israel. And you're going to, next thing you know, you're at the wall and you're doing the thing. And oh, it just feels very disgusting and staged and gross. And so his Israel stance just is an automatic disqualification as far as I'm concerned.
And he is actual, I don't know about friends, but he's at least acquaintances with Shmuley, because there's 20 pictures of RFK and Shmuley together.
Right.
So what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like his spiritual Jewish advisor.
So crazy. You
know, which is, I didn't know that was a job, but apparently it is. And this guy's not even a Jew.
He's just like an honorary. Because the Kennedys aren't Jewish, as far as I know.
No. Shmuley's just a parasite who attaches himself to people. And that's what he did with RFK Jr. He just attached himself. And he's like the Jesse Jackson of Jews. You know, he's just kind of there for some reason. And you're just like, well, I guess he's in the picture, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know. I think RFK's out.
Yeah, I mean, he has no chance of winning, but I do like the idea of maybe like recreating what if RFK Jr. does get elected and Cheryl Hines is sitting next to him in the limo going through Dealey Plaza, and then you just like bam, 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 six shots, the fatal headshot from the front. And it's just a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
It just freeze frame on it.
I don't know. I'd like to see him get in there because everything I want to happen is based on how funny and fun I think it would be, because we're on a sinking ship anyway, so fuck it.
Yes.
So I voted for Kanye West last election. I'll probably write his name again if he's not on because he was on the ballot last time. If I can't have Kanye in, Trump is also a fun one because so many people I know's head will explode and I'll be seeing people cry again, and like they did the first time he got elected, which is hilarious to me. If Biden wins again, I mean, that'd be kind of entertaining just to see if he makes it through a second term. But like, as far as my third point, like above Biden, I'd like to see Bobby the Op get in there because I want to see what even if he only fixes vaccines, even if he just fucking sends all our money to Israel and all this other shit, if he just fixes the vaccine issue, it will have been worth it, in my opinion, because Trump talked about that and was supposed to get Bobby Kennedy on a vaccine safety panel when he was first elected, and that never happened. So if we can just take
Bill
care
Gates
of that alone.
Stopped it.
Yeah, Bill Gates. I might still have that clip. I don't know. But yeah, Bill Gates bragged about stopping it. I think that clip's on my other laptop. But yeah, and he calls him Bob. I don't know what his Bill Gates goes. I don't know what his name is. Bobbert or Kennedy, Robert Kennedy Jr. or something, as if he doesn't know who that is. Bill Gates is such a fucking asshole, dude.
Yeah. What a scumbag. Has anyone won with Battle of the Douchebags with Bill Gates?
Kretschid not only won the episode that he was on with that, but then we took all 8 winners from each 8 episodes in season 1 and put them head to head for the final championship, and Kretschid won the entirety of season 1 with Bill Gates.
No way.
Yeah. By the way, while we're on that, you got robbed with Seagal and Sean Penn. I just have to say that I felt like I got robbed with Dr. Phil. I think you got robbed with both of those.
Well, listen, Steven Seagal is, when you're known by everybody as being the worst guest host of Saturday Night Live ever, that is
worse than Trump.
That's an honor.
Yeah.
Trump's funny. You know what I mean? Whether he means to be or not, I don't know, but he's funny. Seagal's not funny.
Comedians funny work for 5 years to get a type 5, and Trump can do a type 5 for 2 straight hours at a rally and crush.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yep.
The N-word. You know what the N-word is?
What is the N-word?
Nuclear is what he says right after that.
Nuclear.
Yeah, nuclear.
Does he say it all funny like Bush used to?
I should be able to say the N-word.
Nuclear. No, he's nuclear. I think he says it kind of like that.
I'm from Tennessee, and I've been doing this for a long time. This is so important. We have to do this. Let's be nice.
I just have a bunch of
I want Trump back just for the comedic value of it all.
Yeah, and I just, it'll be so, I just want to see the heads explode. Trump is Trump is almost as much of a Zionist as Bobby Kennedy and Joe Biden. So, but
I like the Jews. They're okay, not bad.
Jew.
But I, yeah, it's just for the entertainment, man. I like that's all it comes down to because nobody's gonna fix anything. I realized when Bobby Kennedy was talking about banning assault weapons, and then. Dude, his VP, I'm sure you have some stuff to say about his VP pick, right? Isn't she a Soros sister and all this stuff?
She's she was married to Sergey Brin of Google. So, and he's an intelligence asset. So, Google. You know, and a billionaire, you know, one of the richest people in the world. And that it's, and of course, the incubation of Google coming out of Stanford and getting research grants from the feds is, you know, I mean, sort of legendary. So when you're part of the largest intelligence gathering, publicly traded intelligence gathering companies in the world, you're going to be tied in. He's a member of the Aspen Institute. He's a World Economic Forum young global leader, and she was married to him for a long, long time. She's got a shitload of money, and she's got no experience. I don't know what this, I mean, this pick is like, if you make me your vice president pick, I'll finance your whole campaign.
That's what it was.
And that's the only arrangement.
She funded the Super Bowl ad, right? Isn't that something like that? Or funded the pack that funded it. $4 million she donated. So like if he would have picked somebody like, honestly, if he wanted my vote, he would have picked Kanye West as his VP because then I know he's not going to be soft on Israel. But if, he could have picked somebody like Dave Smith.
Well, he would have guaranteed himself to not get murdered, too. You know, I mean, if Kanye vice president,
Kanye,
that's your
big
that's
time.
Your insurance policy.
He could have picked Kanye. He could have picked Dave Smith. And if you really want to be reasonable, somebody like Rand Paul would have been good. Somebody like that.
Dave Smith would have been a killer. Yeah.
Did you see that debate with him and Dave Smith when Bobby asked to come on Dave Smith's show?
No.
So Dave Smith was talking shit about RFK Jr. saying, what the fuck with this Israel stance? And Bobby asked to come on. And so he did Dave Smith's podcast. And it was the second or third time he'd been on. But he asked to come on that time to clarify his Israel stance. And it's fascinating because he just gets eviscerated by Dave Smith. And Dave Smith starts off by saying, look, I think you're so right on every other issue. The pharmaceutical stuff, the vaccine stuff, the military industrial complex, how the CIA is out of control, and RFK just doubles down, man. He's like, you know, I'm anti-war except for this war, and if we don't destroy Hamas, no matter what it takes, no matter how many children have to die, then Hamas is just going to come back harder. And when Dave Smith counters with like, okay, if you kill all these people and these innocent people, you're for every child you kill in Gaza, you're creating 10 more terrorists. And RFK Jr. just didn't want to hear any of that shit. I don't know. It's really concerning. And it's sad. Like you said, like you really thought like, oh, this guy's on our inner corner. And then he has so many blind spots that seem to be deliberate.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
He's too smart. Like he's too smart to.
He's too smart to not understand this. So you go, you're being made to not understand it.
You know, I guess it is a good insurance policy because there's a lot of. You know, I'm not smart enough to know for sure, but it seems like there's a decent amount of evidence to say that Israel was partly responsible for not only 9/11, but the JFK assassination. So if you want to get some, I get the calculation. You're like, okay, I don't want to go out like my dad and my uncle did, but I actually want to do some good. So I'll make the pharmaceutical companies my enemies, but have somebody like Israel my ally so that I can at least get something done without getting my head blown off. I get it, but it's still like, fuck, man.
It's a shitty deal no matter what.
Yeah.
If that's the calculation he's made, then that's it. I mean, like you said, he can't not understand it. I mean, Dave Smith is a logical guy and very reasonable. And, you know, and so it's not like, you know, he's going to go, oh yeah, I guess I see your point. I'm going to change my mind. No, he's Team Israel. There's no changing his mind on this one. And I don't think it has to do with, you know, how he actually feels. I think this is a calculation. I think that he knows I've got almost no shot anyway, but, you know, but if I've got Israel on my side, I'm at least in the game, you know.
When you say, without brag, when you openly brag about being the most I think his exact quote was, I am the most pro-Israel candidate in modern United States history. Something like that. Pretty close to that. I'm like, that's
crazy.
That's a weird flex, man, because Joe Biden's over here openly talking about being a Zionist, and Rabbi Shmuley says Trump was the best president for Israel we've ever had. So you're more pro-Israel than those two guys? It's like,
I mean, just show us who's really running things then.
Titillating
ass.
Titillating
ass.
Titillating
ass.
Titillating
ass.
Titillating
ass. 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 Ass.
Got my Bill Gates drops.
It was all poop water.
Do you think we'll have President Bill Gates within our lifetime? I'd vote for that at this point. Fuck it. Let's just lean in. Like Midnight Mike always says, it's like, I'm just going to simp for Biden as hard as I can. I like the idea of we'll just go.
Leaning into a president of... A president, Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
Where you're like, just fucking end this experiment. Let's just get it over with. Bring in the Antichrist. Let's do it. Let's wrap this up.
If anybody Jared is going to be the Antichrist, it's Elon Musk is the guy, right?
I mean, you would hope.
I'd love to. I think we've talked about this on the show before with somebody we were talking about, but. The idea of like in the Mark of the Beast, instead of 666 on the right hand of the forehead, it's 42069 because it's Elon as the Antichrist. We just go into enslavement with Neuralink brain trips and shitty fucking boomer Twitter.
I'm gonna like be the devil and shit.
Bro.
He wants to put a brain chip in you. That's not going to work for me. I'm not doing that. Okay. You want to sell me an electric car? Fine. Solar City? Okay. X? Yeah, I use it to argue with robots online. Starlink? Yeah, they used it at an Acapulco. They needed it because internet was... So, yeah, but... Brain chips, that's a no for me, dog.
Well, that's the thing is, Kurzweil, you know who Ray Kurzweil is, right?
Yeah.
Him and all these guys are saying, oh, actually, it'll just be nanobots that just go in and they'll enter your nasal passages.
I don't want that either.
We won't have any surgery. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Well, this could be done completely unconsensually, just like how Bill Gates released 350 million GMO mosquitoes. Like, we could already have fucking nanobots in our brain. You ever have intrusive thoughts, Charlie?
Goddamn nanobots.
That's okay. So this is pretty tinfoil hatty on my part. But I've talked to Dean Reiner of Up Is Down, and I've talked about this at great length drunkenly on the phone late at night. It wasn't until the 4 and especially 5G towers came out, which by the way, on mushrooms, I'm convinced that you can see the beams coming out of those cell phone towers, like visibly see the beams. But
yeah, probably.
It wasn't until those things came out that my intrusive thoughts got way darker and way more regular. And I've never acted on them, but I think there is something to be said about intrusive thoughts and cell tower mind control. and maybe these fucking nanobots that we're inhaling. Because I've seen videos of Ray Kurzweil where he's going on and on about, oh, it's clouds and nanobots and we'll be connected to the cloud. The clouds and nanobots will come in and connect you to the internet and it'll be symbiotic. They'll be in the air. They'll be in your brain. They'll be in your body and your nervous system. And I'm like, okay, well, what the Art fuck? How do I know this isn't already going on? How do I know I'm not connected to the internet?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's part of the atmospheric aerosol injection program.
Oh, there it is. Now I like that.
I mean,
I don't
it's part of that.
Yeah.
That's my guess. Because that's why the CIA would be involved in it, would be for mind control purposes. And when John Brennan's the one announcing it, then you're going, all right, well, I mean, I know you guys want to control the weather to make it rain on people, but also if you want to spread a bunch of nanobots around, yeah, that'd be a good place to do it.
I think where's that clip? I think it's, stratosphere aerosol injections.
Yeah.
I have that somewhere. Fuck. Chop out this silence and post here once I find this. What the fuck? It's somewhere. I guess I'm going to have to find it from my, I'm going to have to find it from my into show mix because I can't find the full clip here.
Yeah. Well, if you guys with your tinfoil hat wearing guys with your conspiracies about chemtrails, you guys are crazy.
Here it is. Yeah.
Another example is the array of technologies that potentially could help reverse the warming effects of global climate change. One that has gained my personal attention is stratospheric aerosol injection, or SAI. A method of seeding the stratosphere with particles that can help reflect the sun's heat.
You might as well be blocking out the sun. Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Man.
So don't tell me chemtrails are fake. Okay.
Tennessee just passed a bill to outlaw chemtrails. Thought that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Who knows if that's actually going to. I mean, how do you enforce that?
How could
that?
They outlaw them if yeah, they don't exist?
How do you enforce that anyway? Yeah. It's the chemtrail bill is what it was deemed. But they said chemical and biological agents being added to commercial or private jet fuel was what the bill, the legalese of the bill said. But it's been passed. So, you know, I guess I still see the fucking, I saw him this morning. I don't know how long it takes for a bill that's been passed to be enacted, but BBC's reporting on it and referred to it as the chemtrail bill.
They're trying to dump as much on you as fast as they can before they can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think that's going to get enforced at all. It's like when those cities that vote to have fluoride removed from their water, the feds step in and say, actually, you're going to have to keep that in there.
Yeah.
Ugh.
They hate us. They want us dumb. They want to spray us like roaches. They want to poison our food and our water and our
I love
minds.
Roaches sitting in my lap.
Roaches. Didn't Joe Biden like to talk about roaches?
That's what I was seeing. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, roaches.
And I love roaches sitting in my lap. They used to rub my hairy legs. Yeah. So you talk, okay, so on Behind the Schemes, it might have been like a year ago or something, you talked about your DMT experience at Anarchapoco.
Yeah.
Can you give me like the nutshell version of that again? Because it's probably been a year since I heard the story, but you talked about the grid in the sky and you were on the beach, I think. Because yeah. Yeah, I want to get into some philosophy and stuff with you.
Yeah, I went down and I bumped into my DMT partner, named Johnny Dollar, who's like a crypto artist. And he and I had been paired up 2 years earlier, the last 2 years at Anarchapulco. We had been DMT partners, and then I wound up running into him just randomly down there on a street corner. And I said, he said, hey, I've got smokable DMT now. And do you want to do it? And I was like, yes, this is what I've been kind of looking for, because the kind we did was 5-MeO the first 2 years where we were there, and that's like powder stuff and they blow it up your nose and it's kind of a different trip. It's more of like a 40-minute trip as opposed to like a 10-minute, you know, the 10-minute Joe Rogan trip that they talk about. So the last night, Friday night, we went down onto the beach and took some towels down there, and it was at night and it was perfect. There's nobody around. It was totally dark. You could see all the stars. And I did it like four different times that night. Each time I would lay down and close my eyes. But the fifth time, the final time, that was when he was like, all right, he's like, this one, I want you to hit this pipe as many times as you can, is, you know, because you really have like a 20-second window before it starts to come on. So you really need to kind of smoke it as fast as you can. So he's like, hit this as hard as you can, as fast as you can, as much as you can. And then when it, and he's like, I'll take the pipe out of your hand. Don't worry about that. But just don't lay back. So
you were using a glass pipe and not like a dab?
We were using a vape pen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he said, don't lean back and don't close your eyes. This time I want you to stay seated, like on your butt, you know. We're just sitting on the beach. Stay seated and keep your eyes open. And, you know, let me know what you see. I was like, okay. So that's what that was. So I did what he said. And as soon as it kicked in, I could just see this faint grid, this like bluish green light that was coming out of the sand. It was extending all the way through the ocean. The way I was sitting where I was looking at the water, even though it was nighttime, I could still kind of see it because the moon, but everything froze, like everything just froze in place. It was wild. And I could see this grid that extended as far back into the horizon as I could see, and as high up as I could see it. I started like looking up into the sky, to see the stars, and behind them, I felt like this, the perspective is tough because you're fucked up for one, but also you don't know really if the stars are in front of the grid or behind it. I mean, it's a little kind of hard to tell, but I distinctly had a feeling like I was in some sort of like enclosed system. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I was in a, I don't know, man. I mean, it was like it, because I could see like where
an intergalactic prison grid.
It felt like inside a firmament or something, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of line of thinking where you're like, oh, okay. You know, where are we? It's very, you know, it's disorienting because it doesn't make doesn't really make sense, but you feel like you're kind of seeing like a base layer of reality.
Yeah.
You're seeing the framework and everything that's kind of gets built upon this grid. And it was just a weird trip. And so, and when it wore off, I looked over at Johnny and I go, I saw the grid. And he just smiled and he said, good. He says, I knew you would. That's why I wanted you to keep your eyes open. And
yeah, it's interesting because like, so many people recommend closing your eyes, and I've done both.
Yeah.
I think if you're indoors, it's best to close your eyes, but if you're outdoors in nature, definitely keep them open.
Yeah, and so I did both, and they were both different. They were both interesting and valuable, but that one where I was sitting there looking at the grid, that one was a tough one because you know, you feel like your little processing power of your brain is just inadequate to figure out what's going on here. And you just feel like a big dummy looking at it. You're like, am I like a character?
Yes.
Is this some sort of game? am I like a sim? You know, am I like an NPC? You know what I mean? You start asking like, what
did you come in contact with any entities?
No.
Really?
Okay. No, I didn't.
No. I guess in general, my DMT experiences have not been involved entities except for when I went completely out of body. But I had like almost all of my hardcore mushroom trips, like real mushrooms, not these gas station companies. I mean, but like, yes, like penis envy, albino penis envy, B plus cubensis, all those. Like I became very adept at contacting beings. And I'm fully convinced that on DMT and especially mushrooms and acid, you can contact extra-dimensional aliens, whether you want to call them aliens, demons, angels. I'm convinced.
I wouldn't be surprised. You're definitely in a place where if they were talking to you, you might be able to hear them or see them or interact with them a little better.
I'm talking like mostly the astral plane, but if you're bombed on enough acid or mushrooms, if you're just walking around in broad daylight, you can see like some beyond shadow people. I'm talking like some real fucking, you know, like Alex Jones talks about the 800 foot tall praying mantis that's trying to eat your brain, like that type of shit. So you've never had any entity contact on psychedelics at all?
No.
Wow, okay.
Not that I can think of. I drank a case of beer one night on acid. That was I just could drink and drink for whatever reason.
I've told that story fucking way too many times on the show, but I'll tell you about it sometime off the air. My first fucking real just tearing through the veil fucking acid trip before I knew what psychedelics were, so I just fucking got thrown overboard real quick. And
acid is confusing and a bit much for me. I like a good mushroom trip. We did peyote in Mexico. That was fun. I enjoyed that. It had a mushroom-esque feeling to it. This last time when I was there, just a couple weeks ago, I did bufo.
Did you boof the bufo? What is bufo?
Which is,
did you boof bufo it?
Toad venom.
But did you boof it?
No, I smoked it.
Fuck, okay.
I smoked the shit out of
you,
it.
Are you telling me that you blew the opportunity to boof bufo?
I did.
Fuck, man. Have you ever boofed anything?
No.
I should have boofed these gas station gummies now that I think about it. I'm really high.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. More so than I expected. I only ate those a half hour ago, I think. So.
Good. I'm glad they worked. They might work too well.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Ugh. And I just wish I had time. I'd get on one of those boats.
I want to do a podcast from a boat. That sounds cool.
I went out on Berwick's boat.
Ricky
a
Berwick?
Year ago. On Jeff Berwick. And I got a chance to corner Dr. Andrew Kaufman. He was on there.
Oh.
I had him explain to me explain to me terrain theory. Like, what the fuck is this all about? And after he got done with it, I was probably more confused than when I started, I guess, if I'm being honest. But
I had Jamie Deluxe explain terrain theory to me, and I think I know all I need to know about it now. I'm convinced.
Cool.
I
like Jamie.
Jamie's great. So as far as whether it's your life experience, combined with everything you've read or learned, and your psychedelic experience and your spiritual journey, what do you think, according to your best guesstimation, what are we on? What is this? What are we? Where are we? And who is God? What is God? This is what I'm fascinated by these days.
I mean, I
know this is an impossible question to definitively
answer. I am open to debate about this topic, of course. I don't have strong feelings about it.
I don't have a strong conviction. Okay.
I don't. And part of it is I'm not religious. So I don't drag any of that religion into it, you know? So I'm not like, I don't, you know, people ask, do you believe in God? Look, I believe that, like, I don't know what you want to call it. There is some sort of organizational structure to the universe.
I think you can just call it. I think that instead of, yeah, if God has too much baggage, just it, I think is worse.
Yeah, God drags a lot of baggage into it. Whatever set up the grid, whatever chemical structures came together. I mean, the fact that, like, our bodies are set up in a way that we process DMT all day long, that's wild to me, right? That feels like it's not an accident. So it feels like there's intelligent design, and it makes you wonder, are we part of some giant experiment where they're like, we're just running a simulation? I mean, your life is real as real can be, right? It's just a bunch of electrical impulses anyway, right? So what's the difference? But, like, we're maybe something it needs to, you know, is running a test. What happens if I mix all these things together? Let's watch it. Because it's arrogant of us to think that we're at the top of the food chain, right? There's got to be something above us. I mean, just everything, everybody's got a boss.
Well, that's for fucking sure. So, yeah.
So the fucking arrogance of us to be like, oh, well, we're above. So, okay. So theoretically we would have something it above us. Why would they be above us? Well, what would be the purpose? Well, I mean, part of their job is to control us. Part of that is don't let them know too much. Don't let them understand too much. If the best way to control them is to control, limit their possibilities, limit their ideas of what is even feasible. And I think that that's one of the things that we've been under attack by over the last 50 years or so has been, they just want to suck the motivation out of everybody, make everybody uncurious about the world. And I'll tell you, the thing that I think connects, one of the common denominators between all of the people that do the podcasts that I like and are interested in the topics that I'm interested in, they all have had psychedelic experiences. It opens you up to the possibility that everything that you know is bullshit, right? And that's a powerful place to be. It's very humbling. So, like, you know, that's the power of psychedelics. It doesn't give a shit what you think you are. You know, it'll kind of help you see what's really going on. And from there, you know, I just find that most of the people that I know that I really connect with and like have been on that path as well. Yeah, most of them for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Psychedelics are, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I said, and I know you are of the same mind. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's crazy to me. Psychedelics are a deprogrammer in the sense of you're talking about where they can, they deprogram your preconceptions and your upbringing and any brainwashing you've had. They can deprogram you from that and give you a clean slate. But at the same time, I had Jan Irvin on. I need to get him back on again. He was the guy that first introduced Eddie Bravo and Joe Rogan to DMT. And he was, you know, he was the DMT guy back in LA at the time. And now he's super anti-psychedelic to a kind of an extremist point in my view, but he calls them suggestogens rather than entheogens. So they're good at deprogramming you, but they can also be used. There's a reason the CIA was obsessed with them for MKUltra, because while they can be used to deprogram you, when you give somebody a blank slate especially when they're on the under the influence of psychedelics or coming or, you know, post psychedelics, you can also be influenced. And I think he contends that not only Terrence McKenna, but Alan Watts and a lot of these guys, obviously Leary admitted it, were, and most of the psychedelic movement was a complete, was the final, we're still in the final stages of MK Ultra. And I think he makes some extrapolations, but he has a lot of compelling arguments and a lot of source data to back up that these things were and are used as suggestogens. So while they can deprogram you, they can also program you. That's what I'm really weary. And I say this while I'm talking to, you know, people listening that might not trust psychedelics, but as far as people in my personal life and friends go nowadays, I'm really weary about if I suggest to somebody that they need, like, you should try mushrooms. I'm really weary of telling them what they're going to experience outside of being vague enough about it, because I think your expectations before and it can influence the trip, and then what you're told about how you should feel about it afterwards can really, I think you're vulnerable to indoctrination more so with a post psychedelic trip in some ways.
That's why I was, glad. And that's why I think, having a relationship of a DMT relationship with Johnny Dollar, he knew not to tell me anything in advance of that. Keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
Don't lean back. Apart from that instruction, he didn't tell me what to expect, what I would see or anything like that. He knew I would see it, but he didn't want to tell me because he knew, you know how that goes. You don't want to set somebody's mind on something like that. Then you know you sort of contaminate it. So, but when I turned to him and I said I saw the grid, he knew that I saw the grid.
I knew
in his response.
I remember
was
you
that,
saying
like,
it on. I remember you saying as soon as you brought up grid, I was like, yes, that's it.
He was sort of like of the belief. The batch that he had, you see the grid on it at high enough dosage. That's what you see, you know, like, cause he had, I asked him like, oh my God, like I didn't even know they made like DMT in a vape pen. He's like, yeah, he's like some guy was swinging by and he had a bag of them and he was selling them. And I go, oh. He goes, yeah. So I bought some. And so I think that just that batch, as he said, was like, what you get with that is you get the grid for whatever reason. And I don't know.
The first time I tried it, I was off of a bowl on top of weed. So it didn't hit me as hard as it, when I did it. The second time it was off of a dab rig where you heat the nail up with a blowtorch. Drop it on that thing. I mean, it's just before you even can get to your second hit, you're fucking pretty much out of body. But once I started coming back into my body, I saw the grid. It's like this orangish, greenish, just pattern. But I was indoors. But it was like this curvature grid.
Yeah, I'm like, what is that?
And I was indoors and I saw it, and then I went outside and it fit the shape of the sky. But when I was inside, it was almost like I was seeing it through the inside of the house I was in. I'm walking outside and then I see it, and it's just like the complete curvature of the atmosphere.
Yeah. It's tough to go back to like reality after that, you know, because you go, okay, well that feels like I got a peek behind the curtain. But then again, like, I want all that information. I want all those experiences. What am I going to do with it? I don't know, because I still don't even have a solid explanation for where we are and what this is. I mean, I'm gathering this information. I'm putting together these trips over the years. I'm asking questions. I'm trying to be receptive, but I'm no closer to having an answer than I was when I started, to be honest with you. I mean, it really is,
it humbles you, like you said. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's very humbling. Like, holy shit, you want to know how little you know? You know, come take a look at this, and then you go, all right, make sense out of that with your little dumb human brain. And you start asking questions like, well, why are we limited, like, as a species? Why is there like a governor on our brain? You know, why aren't we able to operate at full capacity? Has somebody been tinkering with us? Did somebody set the parameters of us at a certain maximum level where we can only do about this much, or we can only live about this long, or we can only, you know, think about this sort of stuff or see this, infrared, you know, like this wavelength. We can only hear within this wavelength. Like, because I've done
or acid did we do or before. Did we do something bad to, as a species that put us in some kind of timeout? You hear like the Bible, well, stories in the Bible. It's like people used to live 800, 900 plus years old. It's like, is that real? Are the giants we see and hear about, were those real? Did we do something to get put in as humanity in a timeout? Are the Gnostics right that this demiurge put us in some kind of confined space? Like the grid, is that like the soul recycling system that we're stuck in? Is the human race the collective soul species that we're stuck here until we can progress to another level? I think there's a lot of that.
I never had an episode pulled off of YouTube faster than my interview with Alana Freeland.
Really?
Talking about the grid, talking about the soul recycling, talking about all that. Yeah. 4 hours. I put it up, and within 4 hours it was pulled, taken down, and I got a strike.
Where can we find that? I want to put it in the show notes, like at least the audio.
Yeah. She's between her and Celeste Solem, these sweet old ladies that I love to pieces, they scare the shit out of me. Well, because they start talking about FEMA and they start talking about spy satellite grids and things like that, and you're like, we're fucked. You know, like we're totally overwhelmed. And so what do you do? Right. What do you do?
Do you have the episode number of that one offhand so that I can?
No, I don't. I'm going to say it's probably in the 200s somewhere.
And what was the name again of the guest?
Alana Freeland.
F-R-E-E-L-A-N-D.
E-L-A-N-D.
I'm going to find that and put it in the show notes because I'm going to listen to that. And I recommend that people listening to this listen to that.
Yeah, man, she'll freak you out, man. She'll scare the shit out of you.
What do you think about David? Because that's the thing with David Icke. I know you and I have both talked to him. So what do you think he's onto something with the lizard people thing? I mean, he's not changed his tune on that for, what, 40 years?
Look, there is a lot to that. You know, there's something going on out there. When I went to London, they're obsessed with lizards. They've got them everywhere. They've got dragons guarding the gold at the city of London. You know, there's always been a lizard theme running through all that. It's easy to say, that David Icke, he's crazy talking about lizard people. I get it. When you can't drop normies into a lizard person conversation right away, it's too much. But like,
I've never, without psychedelics being involved, but stories. I've seen him a couple times, and Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins says that he saw a record executive shape, eyes turn black and shape shift into scaly skin right in front of his eyes, and he was dead sober, not on drugs. And then
you have
The jinn that in Islam and the Hindus, like all these ancient religions, talk about a shape shifting race of controlling reptilians that pose as humans that puppet. This goes back, 4,000 years. We've been hearing about this race of reptilians that kind of control political things from the shadows. So, and then there's that thing. Look, like I've been seeing about it, but they just talked about it on OBDM. I can't remember the medical term for it, but when you see people as
demon face.
Yeah, and there's like 70 something known cases of it. are they piercing through the veil? Like, did they put on the They Live glasses by accident? Because if you see the artist representations of those demon faces, it's the scars in the cheeks. It's the slit, like the long reptilian eyes, like the pointy ears. It looks exactly like fucking lizard people, bro. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, when fucking Johnny Depp and his lawyer are on, you know, fucking adrenochrome or ether or whatever, and they start seeing everybody in the casino as lizard people. I mean, this lore goes back. There's a reason we have these stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he stands by his Ted Heath story, watching Ted Heath's eyes turn black. You know, I mean,
I've seen people's eyes turn black and start speaking, not quite in tongues, but in a language that I could understand, even though it wasn't English, while we were all on mushrooms. I've seen weird shit happen. I don't know.
Whoa.
And that's just like scratching the surface. So I think demon, the word for it is, biblically speaking, is demon possession. I've seen that happen in person. I'm positive of it. Or angel, like, could be, really? Like, not necessarily, I mean, nothing bad happened, but it was like my friend
just,
was no longer
just
my
an average demon.
Well, I'm not saying it was demonic or angelic, but it was, my friend was no longer my friend. His eyes turned black within seconds, hours after we'd been on mushrooms. Oh, and I was having a conversation with someone who was not my friend, talking differently. And by the end of it, speaking non-English, but somehow I could still understand it. Almost like speaking in tongues.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And
that is tough to deal with.
I mean, it's only spooky in hindsight. At the time, somehow, all of us thought it made sense.
Where was your friend? Does your friend remember?
He has no memory of it. But the other three of us that were watching him and talking to him do. And we were asking him specific questions. And we all knew what
he might be a reptilian.
What's weird is, well, or he had one embody, something embody him. But yeah, maybe. But
right.
What's weird
like
is, what's weird is we all were calling him within moments of him being taken over and his eyes turning black. We all were calling, not his normal, not his Christian name. We were all calling him without agreeing on it or him telling us what his name was. We all called him Zitzwig. We all called him Zitzwig, and I don't know why or where that name came from, and I don't know how to spell it, but we were all sure that his name was Zitzwig. We were all four of us on mushrooms.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, those penis envies are no joke, dude. It's beyond the statute of limitations now, so I have some harrowing drug stories. That one, I mean, that's not even close to, like, the craziest shit I've fucking seen, dude. We've had some wild fucking shit happen. I need to just document them all and like write them down into some kind of, I don't know. I need to just write them all down for safekeeping at some point in case I ever forget.
I bartended from 1995 to 2002 at the craziest bar in Redondo Beach, California. And I saw shit and I was sober. I drank the first year and then the next like 6 years I was sober. So I remember everything that was going on. And dude, I saw the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life there. Not like supernatural shit, just human beings at their absolute worst. You know what that means? Yeah. Like decision making at its absolute worst. You just haven't, like, it was the busiest bar on a Sunday afternoon in the summer down at the beach in Southern California, and we would have a line of people trying to get in, and it would just be packed. And the sort of shit that was going on, we had great bands that would play, but like the sort of fights that I saw, the sort of like, talk about writing a book. I thought like, God, I should probably compile all of it because I saw, you know, it was like way before Me Too.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, the constant changing lineup of cocktail waitresses that we had. And it, I mean, it just was, it was like the greatest party stories I could tell from that era before everybody had a cell phone. So nobody was taking pictures, all this stuff, except for me. I always had a camera with me. And I would take pictures of all this stuff. So I've got photo albums.
Films. Oh, shit. Do you still have those pictures? You could make a book. You just got to blur out the certain faces, man.
I do. I have pictures from all this shit.
That's fucking awesome.
All of our Vegas trips.
Oh, that'd be like, a we great would get photo off work. Album.
Dude, we'd get off work on a, we'd work all Sunday and it'd be like the busiest day. And then we'd get off work Sunday night at like 8 o'clock after having like bands play. And we'd just take a cab to LAX and get on a plane and fly to Las Vegas that night and gamble all night long and stay up all night long and fly back early in the afternoon the next day after staying up all night.
Dude, I miss my days of degenerate behavior, dude. Those,
used to do that shit at least 3 times a summer.
Fucking awesome. I missed it. Like, dude, I miss when I just was a fucking complete degenerate piece of shit and had no cares about anything. Like, not that I was like, I wouldn't fuck anybody over or do anything like mean or anything.
No, that's how I was too. I wouldn't do anything like,
yeah, you're not nefarious,
negative towards anybody.
No, but you don't have any responsibility. Yeah, you don't have any responsibilities. You don't have kids. You're just like, I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, you, it's the ultimate, I don't give a fuck. Just roll the dice every night, see what happens. Like, I miss that. Like, I went through like maybe 2 years of my life where it was just fucking, just we're going, like, we're winging it all the time. Like, no plans and just like whatever happens, happens. Like, fucking driving around in a car with an ounce of weed in a jar, hitting a bong while you're driving type shit. Like, just retarded shit.
Yeah. Like, looking back on a lot of it, probably shouldn't have been doing it. Got lucky.
It's a miracle I'm like not in jail, let alone still alive. But goddamn, it was a good year and a half or two.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like leaving high school, going into college was that was that area, the era of my life. It's like just fucking doing dumb shit.
So my freshman year, speaking of statute of limitations running out, my freshman year of college was 90. So that's, I'm gonna make you feel super old. That was the first time I ever tried mushrooms, and because I'm like hardwired for business, as soon as I bought the mushrooms, I was like, there's a market for this. How much did I pay for this eighth? How much could I get an ounce for? How much could I get a pound for? You know what I mean? How much could I get 5 pounds for? Like, yeah. I immediately went into, and like,
it's the worst drug for capitalism, mushrooms. Isn't it?
I am going to sell the shit out of this stuff, right? So that's immediately where I went. So within 2 months of being a freshman in college, I was running a mushrooms empire. And
we turned the our small community college on its head, dude. I mean, everybody, it's like half the people at the college were at some point walking around with their pupils dilated. It was insane. You have fucking college professors geeking. Yeah.
One particular weekend or whatever, it was like, the big party day was Thursday night, and I went to USC in downtown Los Angeles. The big party night was Thursday night for sure. It was way more fun than like Friday or Saturday. Friday or Saturday, there was so much other shit going on in the city that people got distracted because you're right there in LA and you could do anything. But Thursday is basically like, you have school tomorrow. You've made the calculation that you're fine going hungover tomorrow, Friday morning, but you're going to basically party around campus, right? So all of a sudden, like I get like a phone call from someone who's like, I need to get like how much do you have? And I told them, and they're like, we'll take all of it. And I was like, okay. okay. So I sold out of like a pound and a half mushrooms, like in one deal. And they were like, hey, do you have any more? I was like, no. And I said, but let me ask around to the other guys that I know that are, I reached out to them. And they were like, dude, we're out too. And I was like, yeah, so I don't know what's going on, but we all got kind of cleaned out all at once, right? So apparently there was like a big fraternity and sorority party that like multiple fraternities were having this party and they were all fucked up, right? And I didn't know because I didn't go. But the way I found out about it was about 2 weeks later, I'm riding to campus from my off-campus apartment. And there's this area where everyone kind of comes to, it's like a stoplight and everyone sells t-shirts out there. And I see this t-shirt and it's got like a big mushroom on it. I'm like, hey man, let me see that t-shirt. And it's got like this puffy glow in the dark ink. You know what I'm talking about? The puffy ink.
Yeah. It protrudes slightly from the shirt.
Uh-huh. It's kind of light green. And it'll glow in the dark. And I look at this shirt and it's a big mushroom and it's all painted in that glow in the dark green. And it says across the top, USC Shroom Fest. And it says, you weren't there, but I saw you anyway. And I was like, holy shit, this is what cleaned us out.
That's fucking awesome.
The USC Shroom Fest. We didn't know anything about it. This had to have been what cleaned us out. It was so popular they were making shirts and just selling them on the side of the road.
What's the most like biggest group you've ever done with people that are all tripping? Because Bonnaroo is kind of like that.
Probably like, maybe 10.
Yeah. I think 10 is my favorite number. I like 3. One
the first time I ever did it was there was it was me and it was my random freshman college roommate named Damon. We just got randomly placed next to each other and we both decided to do mushrooms for the first time ever. And then my other friend Toshi, who was a friend of mine from boarding school, we'd gone to boarding school together, and he was visiting me at USC, and the three of us did mushrooms and listened to Pink Floyd and smoked Marlboro Reds. I don't think I'd ever smoked a Marlboro Red before. I smoked like an entire pack. I was so fucked up from
that. That's the only time I quit smoking for 7 months was because of mushrooms, because I smoked a cigarette and I was like, ugh, and I just couldn't do it. Like I would gag every time. And then I got drunk and then I wasn't drinking during that time. I got drunk and I was like, oh, cigarettes are great. What was I thinking?
Yeah, so that was the first time I ever did it. And so I was like 18 and I might have even been 17.
Dun, dun, dun.
I started college at 17. I don't know. I think maybe I just turned 18.
I will say like with big groups, that's why what made me think of it was the frat shroom frist, because if they had enough if they had pounds, multiple pounds, they had a lot of people there. It's when you have a bunch of people, it all on the same vibe, on the same substance, especially with mushrooms, it really is a spiritual experience. And even though not even probably, I mean, there's people on Molly, on acid, on fucking coke and everything at Bonnaroo, everybody's all over the place. But one thing is, once the sun goes down, all 100,000 people there, their eyes are just solid black. Everybody's fucking geeking on something. So,
yeah,
but it's crazy. The energy you feel, it's like, it's church times a million where it's like everybody's receiving the gospel at once, dude. It's when you have a band and when there's 30,000 to 80,000 people at the main stage out of the 10 stages at Bonnaroo. And it's just the last band, whether it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, the last band of the night. And you got 30,000 to 80,000 people just all like vibing on the same thing, mostly on psychedelics. The energy, it's almost like you feel, you leave your body and you feel like you're part of, on a very physical, visceral sense that you can really feel, and it feels real at the time. You feel like you are that whole group of people. Like you transcend your own ego and become like the whole, you're not just the drop in the ocean, like you're the whole fucking wave of the ocean. It's really hard to explain, but it's fucking, it's a real feeling, and it's one of the most intense feelings I've ever experienced.
I did eat some mushroom capsules at the
right now
Dead and Company. No, at Dead and Company.
Shit, I saw Dead and Company.
Back in July.
Where'd you see him?
At Folsom Field in Boulder.
Okay, I saw him at Bonner.
Jeff Warnock, who what's the music peer to peer site you guys use to share music? He's on there as Empathize.
Podcasting 2.0 shit, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh shit, let me go over where I mean Midnight Mike's stuff is on there. Midnight Mike's.
Yeah.
Ellen Beats. Empathize. I feel like I might have heard that on Homegrown Hits.
Yeah, he's got a G.I. Joe name.
Let me it's East to West, Echo Chamber.
He's a good dude.
I'm gonna play a little bit of this.
And he's like, hey, I got an extra ticket.
I'm gonna play a little bit of this for a second.
Yeah, he'd love it.
I love that saxophone. Yeah, I'll put that.
He's got good like music to listen to at the end of a mushroom trip.
I'll put that shit in the show notes too. Yeah, I've.
He had some capsules, and so we ate those, and we went to
the show
and we had a great time. And they had the drones, the drones at the end of it that made the Steal Your Face logo and made the teddy bears dance and all that stuff up in the sky. We were just like, holy fucking shit! There's Blue Beam is going to be so easy.
I heard Alex Jones like 20 years ago saying like, since the 1980s, they've been able to project the Easter Bunny for 3,000 feet tall up in the sky. Dang it! Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Have you been to Red Rocks? For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
What's some stuff you've seen there? That's got to be my favorite venue I've ever been to.
I saw Bill Burr. I do his live Netflix special there.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw that. I saw John Mayer. I saw Jason Mraz. I saw. Oh, yeah.
That's such a cool venue, dude. Overlooking Boulder.
It's a killer venue. It's a trippy place.
The one I'm really kicking myself. I've watched the stream of it like 3 or 4 times now, but I'm kicking the South Park Primus and Ween with the Trey and Matt. That would have been so cool to see at Red Rocks. And they used the rocks so well. They projected cartoons that they had designed just for the rocks on the side of the amphitheater, just for that venue. And man, they killed it.
That's perfect.
Did you ever watch any of that?
The thing about Red Rock is that it's not like they're up on like a big high stage. The stage is really low. So it feels like the band is like, you're like right on the band.
Yeah.
It's a narrow kind of canyon.
Yeah.
Where it's got these rocks that are sort of on either side. I live in that mountain chain, that same, chain of mountains. If you just extend up from my house like 8 miles, you're at Red Rock. So it's this unique, weird mountain formation with these really and I think most people know it from the U2 Sunday Bloody Sunday live 1980s video of him doing that, where he's singing that out in the rain. That's
has Red Rock's Rock. Been around that long? The venue?
Yeah, that's from Red Rock. That's where they sort of got on the map, was from that. And then it's just a good place to catch a show. But like,
I'll say this, it was the first place I've ever seen that actively encouraged getting fucked up in the parking lot. They're like, you can't bring weed or your own drinks into the venue, but please do as much as, there's literally signs that say smoke and drink as much as you want in the parking lot. I thought that was awesome. I was like, Fuck yeah.
Yeah, but you've got to walk up the hill. That's the great equalizer. That's what they don't tell you, is that the parking situation sucks ass and that you have to walk for like 45 minutes straight up a hill, and you're just like, oh, I think I'm going to die. And you're either, it's either raining a little bit or it's super cold.
Well, we had just done like a big hike in South Park, Colorado, where you're in that, it's in that mountain range where there's snow top mountains on all directions, and that little old mining town. It's like a little tourist trap, South Park, Colorado. And then we had just done in Colorado Springs, where you got to climb up all those stairs. It's like this huge hike all the way up the fucking mountain. I didn't even get all the way
Garden
up.
Garden of the Gods.
No, it's not. Well, it was maybe near there, but it was like a, it's like literal steps that go all the way up this fucking mountain. God. And it doesn't look, it looks really far, but then once you get halfway up, you're like, oh no, this is really far. I'm going back down. I think I made it like a half, two thirds of the way
up. Oh, is it Castle Rock?
Castle Rock sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right. Let me get a picture up.
That's where I lived for 4 years.
It's like Castle Rock has like all those bars, and it's kind of like, it's kind of like a Pigeon Forest type touristy trap thing.
Yep.
Castle Rock Climb, is that what I would look up? Maybe Castle Rock Climb.
I don't know. There was a place that was like a
I don't see it. No,
it was like a, it was like a hiking place, but it seemed like the stairs just went straight up.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I just, maybe climb stairs. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it also kind of surprised me how many rednecks are in Colorado.
Oh yeah,
dude. If I next time I'm anywhere near there, I'm gonna hit you up. We'll grab a beer or something or whatever.
For sure, please do.
But I, dude, I have,
and I, been, you know, I told you before of spending my childhood in Pigeon Forge so much.
Fucking hate how, that place, dude.
How much I looked forward to going there when I was a kid.
Yeah, just don't work there. It ruins it for you. It really does.
Oh, I'm sure.
But dude, I've been wiggling in my seat. I've been wiggling in my seat for like 45 minutes. I have to piss. I gotta piss so bad.
Okay.
Do you want to give me like a minute?
You want me to filibuster?
Yeah, or I can put on some music or something. Either way.
Oh, put on a clip.
I'll put on one of my old No Agenda mixes. Here's a Christmas one.
Grandma got run over by Corona because we went to her house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as COVID, but as for me and Fauci, we believe. She'd been shopping non-essential, and she didn't wear a mask. She said she didn't want that vaccine. It's our fault for not putting her on blast. But we still shamed her at her funeral for her unnecessary death. I'm sure the gunshots didn't help much. We shot her Christmas Eve before we left. Grandma got run over by Corona because we went to her house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as COVID, but as for me and Fauci, we believe.
How come Anthony Fauci isn't in prison? Seems like something that should be easily rectified if people put their minds to it. Understand the massive PR campaign that's kept that guy.
Holy shit. Okay. I feel a lot
from not being... how come Fauci's not in prison? Do we know why?
Hang on.
I mean, he seems like kind of a disposable guy.
No, he's Italian, actually, isn't he? Isn't Fauci an Italian name?
Hey, he's Italian.
No, I think... and that's another thing, going back to RFK Jr., is he was so... I mean, that real Anthony Fauci book, he's dropping some real knowledge.
Yeah. That's what's so disappointing about it.
And it seems like he genuinely cares. I mean, unless he's a... Because are people that good of actors? I guess they are. He's a Kennedy, but...
I don't know.
Man. You hate to see it. And going, I guess this is what Joe kind of argues against, like people that say everything's an op. Joe hates that shit. Joe of OBDM fame.
Yes.
But he raises a good point where it's like, okay, so even if this is an op, it's moving the Overton window and waking more people up. So isn't that a good thing?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you take what you can get, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you can get a guy who's going to be against the pharmaceutical industry, but he's going to be supportive of Israel, you just go, well, what do I want? You know, what am I willing to trade? I mean, what's reality? What am I willing to say? Okay, fine. You know, at least we'll get rid of one of these guys. But really, will they? Will they, you know, will RFK Jr., because he becomes president, let's just say, you know, he's in there a couple months, and is he going to crack down on Big Pharma, or is there just too much money and too much power there for him to do something like that?
He's either going to die before he's either going to get killed in a repeating of history, going back to what happened to his dad and his uncle, or if he wins, they let him win. Like, I'm same thing with Trump. I just don't see. I don't know. Do you think Trump was a unexpected win of the establishment want / let him win? Did they throw Hillary under the bus?
I kind of go back and forth on that one because same. On the one hand, everything is like rigged, but I thought that, like, they seemed really surprised that Hillary didn't win. And I think that they weren't going to make that mistake the second time around. They weren't going to leave anything to chance. And I think Trump represented, like, something that went against the status quo, and they were kind of tired of that. And he was, you know, getting back to where we started this conversation, you know, he's the guy, he's the party that's agreed to be the oppressed party that has to fight against the establishment, the opposition party, you know, I mean, that's his, you know, that's Trump comes into power and now they play the other role. And then it switches, and now Biden's in there, and Biden's so incompetent that, oh my God, we got to get that other guy back in here, and like here he comes, you know, off the top ropes. And
so what you're saying is Hitler was right.
What I'm saying is that on your tombstone. Hitler. I'm not gonna say any of it. I love all those World War II documentaries, though.
Yeah, that's what they all say. No, I'm just kidding. I go back and forth just like you said. I still can't figure out. I mean, I had Pat Miletich on, and I always quote him saying, he's like, well, Trump taught Vince McMahon how to be Vince McMahon. So this could be the biggest WWE pro wrestling show ever. And it seems like that. But if Trump wins, if they're going after Trump, unless it's all kayfabe pro wrestling bullshit, they're going after Trump hard. They have every means of not letting him be president. So I think I think if Trump wins this election, maybe it's blackpilled of me to say, but Trump was maybe unwittingly, maybe he doesn't know he was, but Trump was part of their plan. If Trump wins this third time, if he wins the third time in a row and he actually takes the White House again.
Then he's being allowed to win.
Yeah. I mean, whether he knows it or not, he's part of the plan. That's how I'm looking at it. Because, I mean, they have so many full safes. They can rig this election. I guess maybe that's not accounting for white hats. Maybe there's white hats in the government. But that thing, that Q thing didn't pan out at all. I don't know, man.
No.
I want to have some hope. Give me some hope as we leave here.
He I think that they genuinely hate him and fear him. I don't think that part is pro wrestling. I think they legitimately despise him. The people that are, you know, like the media, the leftist media, and all those think tanks and all those people, all those assholes that write for the Washington Post. And I think they legitimately despise the man and think that he is a threat to humanity. But I also think that there is a lot of theater that's going on. I think Trump wins. Unless the plan is, you said to give you hope, and I'm here. I am. I'm going to not give you hope. Unless the plan is to totally shatter and demoralize the American public by making it so that this next time around, a deeply unpopular and obviously senile, pant-shitting president, Joe Biden, he wins again, and he wins with 82 million votes. You know what I mean? And you go, yeah. What the fuck? Well, you know what I mean? You go, okay.
I think that is what it's all about. They stole it. I think it's demoral. I think it is about demoralizing.
You know, so if that's the intended plan, if that's what they want is demoralization of the general public, then that's how you do it. You'd make a deeply unpopular guy win by a margin that was even more surprising than his first win, which had questions about it as well. So if you saw that, then you'd be kind of inclined to think, what is the point of anything, right? What's the point?
I think that all the time, Don, to us. Has there ever been a presidential election, especially within our lifetimes, but ever? I'm sure there has. I'm just too retarded to know. But has there ever been a presidential election where two presidents that were both the most recent two presidents ran against each other in the exact same runoff that was the election before? Meaning, like, you know how when Obama, like Bush ran against two different people and Obama ran against two different people. Harry. Yeah. So like it's never been somebody that runs.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
This would be the first time in my lifetime that I know of where it was two presidents that both were president and then ran against each other and then ran against each other again in the next election.
Robot Joe Biden.
Roe Biden. I like that. Roe Biden. That's good.
It
was all poop water.
Charlie, it's been great chit-chatting with you. Thanks for coming on. Macroaggressions.io, the Macroaggressions podcast. The first time I heard you was on Grimerica, and then I heard you on Tim Foyle Hat later after that. Well, and then I'm sure everybody listening to this knows of you. Yeah.
Speaking of Grimerica, I have just finished the uploading of the audiobook for The Octopus of Global Control, narrated by Graham and Darren of Grimerica.
Fuck yeah. No, it must have been, I don't know, man, 4 or 5 years ago, I heard you, maybe, I don't know, something like that. Yep. I heard you on Grimerica talking about that, and that's when I went out and bought the book. I think that's when I first...
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, it's been 7 years since I put the book out, and we're finally doing the audiobook. I had come back from Anarchapulco with a sense of urgency about getting all kinds of crazy shit done. Like, you know, we're just going to do this and we're going to do that. And Graham was like, hey, what about audiobook for Octopus? And I was like, yes, let's do it right away.
Fuck yeah.
They knocked it out in like, the whole thing was done in like, I think 3 weeks.
Dude, that book has been such a good resource for me.
22 hours. So it hasn't been approved yet. I uploaded it today. So, it's not approved yet on Spotify or Audible, but it will be, hopefully, if the AI allows it, within the next 10 days. So
it's all
you illiterates out there.
It's all the audiobook.
We got no excuse.
Fuck yeah, dude. Anything else going on? Obviously, Macroaggressions, the podcast, and in the books. Controlled Demolition of the American Empire is a good one. And yep. Octopus is just fucking classic, dude. I can't tell you enough how much that book has helped me, as you know, as best as could be expected, wake up family members. It's a great, valuable resource. That. Very valuable resource.
We're working on, I'll send you what we're working on.
Oh, secret. Okay. I like it.
Yep. It's Do a it. secret project.
Well, all right, man. Obviously in the show notes, everybody, links to Macroaggressions podcast and Rumble and your own band.video. I'll put all that in there. Yep. And people can check you out. And dude, God bless you. You're doing the Lord's work. Hopefully we'll meet one way or another. Hopefully we'll meet in person.
One of these days.
Yeah. I'd love to come either at a, if it's not at an Anarchapoco or me being in Colorado, maybe it'll be at a boxing match at Chuck E. Cheese or something. It'll
be an OBDM meetup, yeah. Probably. More than likely.
Fuck yeah, dude. Yep. They were talking about a Tennessee Bigfoot gas station rest stop meetup, but I don't know if that's still in the cards.
Oh, you got to get Tony Merkel involved. I'll talk to him. He's in Knoxville.
Okay, fuck yeah, dude.
Bigfoot, you know, you can't.
All right, macroaggressions.io, shitmyass.com. We'll see y'all next week, people.
Shitmyass.com. Shitmyass.com. Shitmyass.com.
Shitmyass.com.
Shitmyass.com.
What the hell is shitmyass.com?
It's the 9th of December, 2019. The IG report drops any minute. There's so much excitement. Unseal the indictments. Can't wait to see Hillary in prison. Then the IG report drops suddenly, and I scroll through to see what it shows. It says Russiagate was all A-OK, and I'm left here sucking a choke. Bill Barr, 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 Barr. Bill Barr, the retard. Yum, yum. String us along, Mr. QAnon man. String us along forever. String us along for eternity, so we never rise up all together. Now John Brennan may be above the law, and Clapper may always run free, we still might get McCabe, and we'll all be good slaves, because QAnon will always be. Bads and tell us it's all okay, just shut up and trust the plan. One day the whole swamp will be drained, just trust Mr. QAnon man. QAnon, non, non, nom, nom, nom. Rise up, just get strung along. String us along, Mr. QAnon man. Just tell us to all trust the plan. Because otherwise we might all resist and take things into our own hands.
Another example is the array of technologies that potentially could help reverse the warming effects of global climate change. One that has gained my personal attention is stratospheric aerosol injection, or SAI, a method of seeding the stratosphere with particles that can help reflect the sun's heat.
It ain't no joke, the whole world will go up in smoke if we don't spray the skies with aluminum and carbide to save the forest. Remember, Kim. made by light. This is the only way to save the earth from the rays of the sun, so the skies leave a spray. Every nation needs taxation of their carbon footprint, and we'll spray them all like